Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5, 6 minutes after the hour on this Thursday morning. We do appreciate you listening. 251-343-0106 if you would like to weigh in on anything we're talking about this morning. Still to come, J. Christian Adams. He's an election lawyer that works for a place called the Public Interest Foundation. And we're going to talk about H.R. 1 and some of the, I guess, more of the philosophical underpinnings of what Democrats want to do with regards to our elections in the country. It kind of a nationalized approach, I think, or a federalized approach, maybe a more appropriate way to describe it, but why that would be a bad thing. That's coming up about a half hour from now, so please stick around for that. Joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest, generous with his time, and we're always appreciative of that. Hails from Ozark, down in the Wiregrass. State Representative Steve Klaus on the line. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Fine, Jeff. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for making time. We always appreciate it. I guess let's kind of get into what, you know, there's a lot of buzz, and I don't know how serious it is, but that we could see an 11th hour approach to, you know, some outstanding issues, be it gaming or be it the prison situation. Is that just buzz and the rumor mill, or do you think there's something to that?
Well, I think there's talk on both of those issues this week to try to see if there can be something put together. On the gambling part, obviously, it's been a issue that we've been dealing with for about the past 4 or 5 weeks since the Senate came back the second time and passed their version. And it's really a tight window for us because, I mean, just legislation is just tougher to pass in the House than it is in the Senate. We've got three times more members. We have a lot more factions in the House than there are in the Senate. So controversial piece of legislation takes time. And, of course, something like this that has been talked about for at least 15 years is obviously very controversial. And I tell you, I would like to commend Representative Chris Blackshear. He really has done a tremendous job of trying to bring everybody together and vetting the different opinions out there about the comprehensive approach. And when you talk about comprehensive on the gambling, that's obviously bringing in the casinos into to try to tag along with the lottery. And the issues always becomes about the venues, the sites, where are they going to be? And that's where the fights start breaking out. And then the secondary issue, which leads to a lot of consternation, is where the revenue goes. And so both of those issues cause a lot of problems, and the different factions trying to put them together to get a 3/5 vote is very difficult to do. But I thought we were real close. I thought Chris did a great job of getting that ball down there in the red zone and getting in scoring position. But it just seems like every time you were ready to put it across the goal line, the goal line got moved. Well, so makes it very difficult.
It seemed like the game plan always was to kind of let the Senate take the lead, and then that burned a lot of days. Do you think maybe the lesson here is that the House is not satisfied with the Senate's approach? If it looks like at any point in time, or, you know, even if they, you know, and you certainly have had your own gambling bills in the past, that the House needs to kind of be part of the origins of whatever is considered there at the end.
Yeah, I think that was an issue because we did talk in the beginning, and then the Senate sort of went their own way with some different language. It really wasn't, it wasn't just so much the House and the Senate. I mean, the governor's office wasn't very satisfied either with some of the sitting language, and particularly on the enforcement enabling legislation. And I think the House did, and this was Representative Connie Rowe, did a tremendous job here bringing in a former DNA agent who has done this type work all over the nation with different casinos, and really tighten that thing up as far as law enforcement and qualifying for licenses and that type thing. I mean, it was going to be under the bill we had and to still have is it'd be very, very difficult to get a license if you had any type of past record. So that was a good thing there. But here again, it all comes down to the sites and where they're going to be. And you know, it'd be a lot easier if you could have a clean slate and say, we're going to just start fresh. And there's no locations anywhere. We're just, you know, but that's not the way it is. We you know, we've got the Indian casinos, and we got the other ones that were brought about by local constitutional amendments that are here and there. And, you know, it's just tough to operate under those parameters.
Was the issue that there were too many sites or not enough sites in the Senate proposal?
Well, I think probably a little bit of both from some sides. Some saying it's too many, some saying it's not enough because it didn't include theirs. And of course, the issue with the Indians, and that's sort of what the poison in the punch was putting the new location in Northeast Alabama, which we got to have, and that's what they want to be able to form a compact, because we can't enforce any type of compact on the existing locations because we took what I would say is the ill-advised move back 15 years ago and suing the Indians to keep them from operating in the state when all independent legal analysts were saying we were going to lose that suit, and we did. And so now we don't have any enforcement over those sites that are already there, unlike Florida, which, you know, 10, 12 years ago, they at first took an adverse effect against the Indian reservations, and they sort of realized that, hey, we're not going to win this. Let's at least get some money off of it, which they did. And now just 2 weeks ago, Governor DeSantis has renewed the compact with the Creek Indians in Florida. And so they're going to bring in hundreds of millions of dollars off their Indian reservations down there, which we're not bringing in a penny. So it's just very unfortunate circumstances.
And the governor's role in this, typically we didn't talk a whole lot about early in the process because the constitutional amendment doesn't need to go to the governor's desk, but I assume the governor would have to have some input with the enabling legislation. Is that kind of how you see it?
She's going to have input on the enabling, and I think has input from the bully pulpit also to encourage legislators who were sort of sitting on the fence, and then obviously with the public too when it goes to the ballot. So the governor has a lot of input on this.
Yeah, and do you think though that going forward though she's going to have to play a bigger role perhaps, like you said, the bully pulpit, but maybe even you're going to need to get this kind of cordoned off in a special session, and you can put that focus solely on gambling,
right,
and you don't have these other medical marijuana filibusters or anything like that taking up time.
Well, that's correct. I mean, she's the only one that called a special session, so it would have to certainly, she would have to be the one that takes the bull by the horn if it goes to a special session.
But it does seem like she would have, she remains a very popular governor. She took more of a leadership role than maybe that makes getting something done more likely, it would seem.
Right. I think so.
Joined by State Representative Steve Klaus here on the program. Representative, the prison issue, speaking to the governor, the underwriters for Core Civic, they've had problems. The wokeification, or whatever you want to call it, of the culture is, Wall Street is not immune to that. So they have backed away from underwriting these lease build prison proposals by Governor Ivey. Tell me this, now it looks like the legislature's going to have to play some role, whatever that might be. What are you hearing there, and what do you think that is going to look like if it does come down to that?
Well, I think we'll be in a special session to deal with this issue. We don't have a choice anymore. We've been talking about this now for 5 years since Governor Bentley put forth the the bond issue proposal in the 16th session that came close to passing. It passed the Senate pretty overwhelmingly and narrowly passed the House with a little bit different version, and then the Senate added a different amendment to what we had did, and it came down one of those last night deals again where we couldn't get it across the goal line by midnight. And I thought we would pass it in 17 after a lot of the issues had been worked out and sort of the newness of it had worn off. But then Governor Bentley had his problems and resigned from office during the middle of the 17th session. So that basically wrapped that up. And then 18 was an election year, and we didn't take it up then. So I really thought we should have taken it up in a special session in 2019 during the regular session, right after we had passed the gas tax. You know, there was disagreement on doing that at that time to try to see what this lease bill issue looked like, you know, and so we thought it was going to get some type of proposal by the end of 19, and it didn't happen, and finally came around September of 20, and then the legislature wasn't able to see any of those details, which I wish we had been, because I think the plug should have been pulled as soon as they came out with those proposals 7-8 months ago. I think we would have saved ourselves a lot of time and money, and could have gone ahead and addressed this bond issue at that time. But of course, the 2020, obviously, that session and the whole year was dominated by COVID. And it was, you know, difficult for us as a legislative body, and still is, but not as bad as it was, to operate, particularly in the House, with everybody spread out all over the place. So we've had a lot of unusual things during this whole time over the last 5 years that have happened, just some bad luck and just some. Maybe not taking the bull by the horn, like I said earlier, and just moving forward with it. But I don't think we have a choice now. We've got to have some new prisons. We got prisons that are just dilapidated and falling apart. And this is not an answer to all the problem, but you got to have that foundation there. And it's just time we move forward on it.
I mean, and I don't know what that would look like, but, you know, theoretically, if the legislature does the bond issue, then you wouldn't necessarily, would you, go with this lease plan, because it involves buying land and building new facilities on new land, but the state has plenty of land, and you overcome that hurdle. There's a lot of underlying things that seems to me that it would behoove the state government to kind of go back to the drawing board and build from the ground up, rather than the proposal as it stands today from the governor.
I think so. I mean, like, we've already got the land, so there was no need to go out and buy a new property, and all the proposed sites that where you're buying that new property. I mean, the folks that live in those areas, they don't want it. So, you know, that's an issue there for those folks. And I think the main issue, though, is once this bond issue is paid for in 30 years versus a lease program over 30 years, and we own the buildings. And, you know, if they're built properly, and hopefully they would be in this day and age, I mean, they last 70 to 100 years, you know.
Yeah, well, the DOJ, I guess, has turned up the wick on it, and is that sort of where the urgency comes from, though?
Well, there's no question we've had a gun to our head here for at least the last 5 years. So we've gone, I would say, probably the last 40 years, and obviously I hadn't been in the legislature that long, but I've kept up with it for that long, underfunding the Department of Corrections. I mean, probably $50 million a year. I mean, they've got now $650 million budget. So, you know, 40 years, that's $2 billion. I mean, we've always had issues with the general fund budget, always having to borrow from Peter to pay Paul and make sure, particularly with Medicaid, that we do the minimum amount so we get that federal match there, which is just, you know, billions of dollars. And prisons have always been put at the bottom of the barrel because nobody cares about prisons. They don't have a constituency.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a lot of it's the legislature's fault over the last at least 40 years, probably longer than that. And it's not just Alabama. It's all over the country. I mean, all governments, when local governments, I mean, prisons and jails always come up last.
Well,
on funding needs.
Representative, we're up against a break here. I got to cut you short there, but I appreciate you making time, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
Okay, I appreciate you.
Thank you. State Representative Steve Klaus, he is the chairman of the House General Fund Committee. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.